Do you struggle with how to pray? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is A Simple Way to Pray. It's written by Martin Luther and translated by Matt Harrison. A Simple Way to Pray costs less than $2 plus shipping and handling. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase A Simple Way to Pray by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A Simple Way to Pray, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Coming off that inaugural event prayer by Bishop Gene Robinson, well, you won't find any vague or generic deities in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. Sacred Head, Now Wounded, It's Christ and Him Crucified All the Way. It's a series of Bible studies, devotionals, and children's messages to help you and your congregation observe the season of Lent. It's coming up. Lent begins in almost a month. Find out more about this resource, Sacred Head, Now Wounded, at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or you can order Sacred Head Now Wounded by calling Concordia Publishing House. Their toll-free number, it's 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Sacred Head Now Wounded, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. Scott Glusendorf joins us for part three of a five-part weekly series about bad ways to argue about abortion. Today we're going to talk about assuming what you're trying to prove. It goes by many names, such as begging the question. The Latin is petitio principi, and it's so common we don't even see it when it rears its ugly head. Scott Glusendorf is founder of Life Training Institute. Scott, welcome back.
Good to be back, Todd.
Okay, are all arguments in the debate, presented as arguments in the debate between life and choice, really arguments?
No, a lot of them aren't. They really break down into two principal categories. There are those who simply assume the unborn are not human, which you referenced just a moment ago. There are those that attack the person rather than refute the argument, and those two make up the bulk of them. There's other confusing things that happen that we've been discussing during this series, but these two, the idea of begging the question, meaning you assume something you're trying to prove, and attacking the person rather than the argument, seem to make up most of what we're talking about. In fact, we had a great example yesterday in the speech by President Obama from the Rotunda steps there, where he argued that we are going to, under his administration, restore science to its rightful place. Now, everybody and their brother, Todd, knows what he means by that. He means we're going to use taxpayer money to fund the destruction of human embryos for medical research. The Bush administration did not allow for federal funding to go to that if it involved continued killing of embryos, but Obama's going to reverse that. And he justified it by saying, we're going to remake science or re-put science in its rightful place. Notice what he didn't specify. How are we going to do that? Well, we're going to do that by ignoring moral concerns. But isn't that the question involved here? Should there be moral concerns that constrain science? He didn't even argue for that. He simply assumed science is supreme.
All right. I guess to understand how this is kind of a violation not only of good sense, but also of a clear way of arguing and therefore really engaging the issue at the center of the life debate, we need to understand how real arguments establish certain things upon which people can agree or disagree.
Well, an argument is a premise or series of premises followed by a conclusion. We call it a valid argument if the conclusion follows logically from the premises, and we call it an invalid argument if it doesn't. If I say, for example, Socrates is a man, all men are mortal, therefore Socrates is mortal, I've given you premises that spit out a conclusion that follows logically. If, however, I say to you, President Bush has returned to Texas, everyone in Texas flies on airplanes, therefore President Bush is an airplane. Right away you go, wait a minute, that makes no sense whatsoever. It's incoherent. But it's still an argument because there's premises followed by a conclusion. But it but what is true about that argument is that it's invalid. It doesn't hold up because there's no logical sequence to it. And when people assume what they're trying to prove, what they do, Todd, is they assume in the premises of their argument the very conclusion they're trying to argue for. So it would be like me saying to you, hey, Todd, have you stopped beating your brother yet? You might say, well, I don't beat my brother. Well, that's not what I asked you. I asked you, have you stopped beating him yet? And if you protest, I just ignore your protest and assume that you're doing the very thing I'm trying to establish that you're doing. That's begging the question.
So you take what should be at the end of the argument, the end result of carefully laid arguments, and you front load it either overtly or covertly into your initial premises or arguments.
Exactly. And we see this in the abortion debate, in the debate over embryonic stem cell research. This kind of thing happens all the time. I'll give you an example. Somebody comes to the pro-lifer and says the following: well, how come you don't respect a woman's right to privacy? You want to restrict abortion. You should respect that woman's choice, her privacy. Well, I'm all for choice. I'm all for privacy. But suppose instead of assuming the unborn aren't human, let's suppose that the argument for privacy was being advanced to kill a toddler. Would the person advancing the privacy argument even for a moment agree to it on those terms, that it applies to toddlers? Never. The only reason they apply it to the fetus is because they assume, as you say, they front load their argument by assuming the unborn are not human, and therefore we can kill them with an appeal to privacy. But that, of course, begs the question of what is the unborn? You can't just assume the unborn aren't human. You've got to argue for it with premises leading to a conclusion.
So in other words, another way of describing this little trick, sometimes it's conscious and sometimes it's just a product of poor thinking, is
right.
A refusal to accept the burden of proof for the real question at hand.
Exactly right. Instead of making your case and giving evidence for your case, you simply assume its truthfulness in the premise of your argument.
What is you alluded to it, but let's get clear. What is the real question, the real point of controversy in the life debate that is so often evaded or assumed wrongly in people who have circular arguments or begging the question?
The central issue comes down to the question, what is the unborn? Can we kill the unborn? I say absolutely we can kill the unborn if the unborn are not human beings. But if they are human beings, then the same arguments you would use to justify killing other human beings would apply in this case. And we would have to come up with justification that is sufficient to end the lives of the unborn in the same way we would have to come up with justification for ending your life or my life. But what people like to do, Todd, is instead of rendering that justification, they simply assume the unborn aren't human and start their argument from there. And that's why you get people saying things like, well, why don't you trust women to make their own personal decisions? Well, I do, but what if it's Andrea Yates and she wants us to trust her to make her own personal decisions about drowning her 5 children in a bathtub? Should we trust her to make that decision? Well, I don't think there's anyone listening to us, Todd, who would say in a million years, sure, trust her to go ahead and do that. And if we said, well, why don't you trust her? They would say, well, because she's taking human life and you can't just kill innocent human beings in the name of trusting someone to do it. Well, if the unborn are human, like those children that she drowned in that tub tragically, then the unborn shouldn't be killed in the name of choice or trusting people any more than those children should have been killed. So we got to get to the issue of what is the unborn and advance our arguments before we simply assume the unborn aren't human.
See, I guess I had thought for a long time that a lot of the arguments you hear in the abortion debate were trying to avoid the question of whether or not the unborn is human. You're saying they don't avoid it. They assume that the unborn is not human. So arguments like, hey, if we criminalize abortion, we're only going to drive women back to the back alley, or you can't stop all abortions, therefore it's futile to make it illegal. They really are assuming too much.
They are assuming too much. The back alley argument definitely assumes the unborn are not human. And we've all heard this argument. Hey, if you pass laws against abortion, we're going to have blood flowing in the alleys of America because women are going to be forced to go get dangerous back alley abortions. Well, first of all, I reject the premise that women are forced to get these abortions. They choose to have them. As my friend Greg Kokel points out, a woman is no more forced to get an illegal abortion because it's outlawed than a man is forced to rob a bank because the state won't put him on welfare. Both have choices. But beyond that, notice what is assumed in the case of the back alley argument. It is assumed the unborn aren't human, because otherwise what is being said is that because the law can, or because some people will kill others in the attempt to break the law, we ought to make it safe and legal for them to kill others in their attempt to break the law. Well, that's just absurd. No one's going to argue that way. I mean, why should the state, Todd, be faulted for making it more risky for one human to take the life of another innocent one? We don't legalize bank robbery to make it safer for felons. It's only by assuming the unborn aren't human can anybody argue that the state ought to make it safer for one human being to take the life of another completely innocent one.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. When we come back, 10 more minutes with him. It's part three of a five-part weekly series on bad ways to argue about abortion. Today, assuming what you're trying to prove. Scott is founder of Life Training Institute. Find out more about Life Training Institute at issuesetc.org, our website. Click on demand. Our in-studio email address live this Wednesday, the 21st of January, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, and our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MYIE. When we come back, Scott's mentioned this several times, not only in the series, but today, the toddler test. If you've got an argument, someone's presenting it to you, and you suspect that perhaps what's really happening here is that your opponent is assuming what they should be trying to prove, try the toddler test. We'll see what it is after this. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is full of resources to help you and your congregation observe the season of Lent. It's titled, O Sacred Head Now Wounded. It contains devotions, Bible studies, sermons, children's messages, and bulletins for the Lenten season. You can purchase O Sacred Head Now Wounded by calling Concordia Publishing House, 800-325-3040, or click the CPH logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Sacred Head Now Wounded.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
The sharpest arrow in your apologetics quiver. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
He was taken away. There's a place for the baby that died, and there's a time for the mother who cried. She
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about assuming what you're trying to prove, one of the bad ways to argue about abortion, part three of a five-part weekly series with Scott Klusendorf. Doug is listening in Edwardsville, Illinois. Hi, Doug.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well.
Good. So I have a question on regarding the pro-life argument. I'm surprised I don't hear the argument of when life begins, because in my very limited experience debating pro-abortionists, no one believes today, thanks to God's blessings of modern technology, no one believes that life begins when the baby comes out of the birth canal. Everyone knows that life begins prior to that, and we can even use the science argument in that case, because science also proves that when cells are reproducing and they're human cells, then therefore human life is living. So I'm surprised we don't use the when does life begin argument, and then use science and then human rights argument.
Doug, thank you very much. Thanks for listening in Edwardsville. Your thoughts there, Scott?
Well, he's right that we have science on our side. The scientific consensus is clear here that from the earliest stages of development, meaning from the very beginning, the embryos and fetuses in question are distinct, living, and whole human organisms. They are not part of a larger human being. They are themselves distinct, whole, living human beings. That's not to say that they're mature. That's not to say that they're fully developed, but they are clearly fully members of the human species. Here's the problem. In today's world, when people hear a scientific argument that is compelling, and the one we just gave is, they often will still try to ignore that evidence instead of doing the hard work of refuting it. They will change the subject by either attacking the person making the scientific argument, something like, oh, you're a man, you can't get pregnant, what right do you have to speak on this issue? Or maybe they will change the subject by simply doing what we've been talking about. They will go on to raise another objection that yet again assumes the unborn aren't human. For example, I remember one time making a case for the pro-life view, using science to make my case, and someone said to me, well, you just don't trust women to make their own decisions, as if the evidence I just laid out was totally irrelevant. And I had to do what I call narrating the debate. I had to gently stop the person and say, now notice something here. I made a claim that the unborn are fully human. I supported that claim with an appeal to the scientific literature. You ignored that claim completely and simply went on to make another assertion. I'm wondering if you might address the argument I just made. And I think that tactic of graciously but firmly pulling people back to the question is something we're going to have to become good at, because people love to just throw up all kinds of irrelevant stuff, and we've got to keep them on track.
Daniel in Minneapolis emails us, some people get confused with this logical fallacy and the phrase, that begs the question, meaning those facts are just begging that a certain logical question be asked. I've often said, instead of saying begging the question, perhaps we should say assuming the question or assuming the conclusion, because begging the question does sound like it's kind of left a question unanswered.
Right, and that is exactly right, what Daniel's saying. It does not mean that because somebody says something, a question now pops into your head that seems obvious. Begging the question means something specific. It's a fallacy, it's a logical fallacy, and it means, as we've been discussing, to simply assume the point you're trying to prove. That's its specific definition, and that's what we mean by saying that a particular claim is question begging.
You say that if you suspect that the person with whom you were engaged in debate is engaged in assuming what they should be trying to prove, there's a simple test for it in the life debate. You call it the toddler test. How does it work?
We call that, trotting out the toddler. Whenever I hear an argument in support of abortion that seems fishy to me, I ask myself instinctively, in fact, I do this with every argument I hear for abortion rights, does this argument work as a justification for killing toddlers? If not, the person is assuming something about the fetus that he's not assuming about the toddler, namely that the toddler's a human while the fetus isn't. If the argument doesn't assume the unborn aren't human but simply grants the premise and says, I'll kill him anyway, that's a different matter. But most arguments assume the unborn aren't human. Appeals to privacy, choice, trusting women to make their own decisions, religious freedom, not forcing your morality, back alley abortions, all of these assume the unborn are not human. And our job is to trot out a toddler. So I'll simply say to the person, hey, you just said that women should have a right to abortion based on the fact we should trust them to make their own decisions. Yeah, that's right. That's my view. Well, suppose I have a toddler up here, and I'll hold out my hand at waist level to help them visualize it. Suppose I have a toddler here whose mother wants the choice to kill him and says we should trust her to make her own moral decisions. Should we grant her that degree of trust? Well, my critic will immediately say no, and I'll say, well, why not? Well, because he's a human being. Ah, if the unborn are human like that toddler, we shouldn't kill them in the name of trusting people to make their own decisions any more than we'd kill a toddler for that reason. Oh, but that's not the same thing. The toddler is human, the fetus isn't. Ah, that's the issue. Are they morally the same? And you see, I keep bringing them back to that issue. Now, notice I have not even argued yet that the fetus is human. I'll do that later. That's my second step. My first step is to establish what the terms of the debate are. And the terms of the debate hinge on the question, what is the unborn? And trotting out your toddler will do that for you. So I would encourage all of our listeners, anytime they hear somebody justifying abortion or embryonic stem cell research, would this work as a good argument for killing a toddler? If not, what are they assuming? I mentioned Barack Obama's speech yesterday. Let's go back to that phrase. We're going to elevate science to its rightful place. Well, what if someone supposed killing two-year-olds to treat eight-year-olds? Would we say that that's an argument about getting science to its rightful place of supremacy? No. We would say that there's a moral question about whether we ought to kill one human being to benefit another. But, of course, that question was completely overlooked in the president's speech.
Two final questions here, Scott. Give us your thoughts on tomorrow's sad 36th anniversary of legalized abortion in the U.S. 1 minute.
Two things are going to happen. I think we're going to see President Obama move swiftly to restore federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, and he'll do that with an executive order. The Congress will follow up with legislation designed to codify that into law at the legislative branch as well. But he will move to do it immediately with the stroke of a pen. I already see that he is restoring funding for overseas abortions where our tax dollars will be used to pay for abortions there. This is a sad day because the Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade basically said an entire class of human beings can be set aside to be killed simply because they're in the way of something we want. And now all the branches of the federal government are aligned squarely behind that proposition. So we as pro-lifers have our work cut out for us. But I'll tell you something, Todd, we're not quitting. We are going to fight. We're going to take on the attitude of Winston Churchill and say we will never surrender, never, and we're going to keep going.
Next Wednesday, we'll continue our series with Scott on bad ways to argue about abortion. Next time, confusing human value with human function. Scott Klusendorf is founder of Life Training Institute. Scott, look forward to our next conversation.
Hey, always great to be with you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll begin a two-part series on the Lord's Supper. Pastor Paul McCain will be our guest. That's a rare treat. We'll also discuss the Freedom of Choice Act and the anniversary of Roe v. Wade with Colleen Carroll Campbell tomorrow on the program. We were talking recently with Hadley Arkus. He's author of that Born Alive Infants Protection Act. Hadley said he was speaking with some of his postgraduate students. They were talking about abortion. And they were talking about partial birth abortion. In the course of the conversation, many of them were willing to admit the partial birth abortion, this particularly heinous form of abortion, but no more heinous really in the eyes of God or the unborn than any other form. They were willing to admit that it was infanticide. And at the same time, these students, some of them were willing to say, but we have to tolerate that form of abortion in order to protect the larger right of a woman's right to choose. Infanticide tolerated with eyes wide open. In order to protect a woman's right to choose. People who were willing to say with a completely straight face that this child nearly born is fully human and should be protected, but we can't protect them because that would mean overturning so much of a woman's right to choose. You see, even when we don't assume that the unborn is something other than or less than human. We live in a society where people are willing to withdraw the protections of law and of human dignity and rights from that human being already. This is what we get when we, for so many years, have assumed what should be proven. We've assumed that the unborn is simply not a human being. But the unborn is a human being. The unborn is of the same stature before God and the law as I am or you are. Which means this is really about defending life from beginning to end. What we are defending is our fellow man, our neighbor. We've got a lot of high-flown rhetoric lately, especially with the presidential inauguration, about caring for one another, about reaching out and protecting one another. Let's include in that big circle of protection and concern the least of these, the unborn, our fellow man. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.